Welcome to Season 5 of Kin Folklore, where we have gone through a portal and returned to the world of His Dark Materials for Season 2 of the BBC HBO series based on the novels written by Philip Pullman. Last week, we covered the fight of the century when Pan and the Golden Monkey mixed it up in their rematch. We've covered how personal histories impact choice and motivations, and talked about the origins of the serpent referenced in the story.
In this episode, we'll be covering all the demon-changing and world-exploring action of Season 2, Episode 6, entitled Malice. We'll recap the episode, talk a bit about our observations, and discuss some of the themes. And then we'll look forward to next week's finale and speculate wildly about what's going to happen next.
Andrea?
Mm-hmm.
May I speak freely?
I don't know. I guess so.
Even though I would rightfully be punished for these words, I mean...
Heresy!
The authority has personally told me to tell you that you will enjoy this adult content. As long as you don't drink of the wine of Chittagatsi. Trust me, leave that behind. Leave the Chittagatsi wine. It's not good. Not a good look. Whew. So... speaking of Chittagatsi, Will's hand is bleeding out, getting worse.
It's pretty bad.
It's really bad. He's laying in the bed. He's shaking. He's looking like, you know, it's really rough. And Lyra runs out to get Will some water when, you know what? She hears a little noise and it's about to go down.
Mm-hmm.
It's Angelica and the crew, and they're here to collect their payment of that ass. Like, they're like...
I mean, she let them know she was coming. They should have expected this.
She did. She told them. She let them know right away. So, basically, she hears all the children in the streets, and somewhere outside of Chittagatsi, the witches are assessing the new world. They're seeing angels fly around above them. The last time the angels made themselves seen was thousands of years ago when they came to make war. Ruta follows the angels in pursuit of Azrael, and Serafina and the other witches decide, we're going to go find Lyra. Lyra is in peril at this point, trying to escape Angelica and Paola and the other children who are attempting to bust that ass. They're trying to break in the house. They're looking for blood, okay?
Yeah, like this was not going to end well for Lyra and Will.
Not at all. Like, they're coming after them, and she manages to get Will on the rooftop. But the children catch them up there, too. So catch them outside. How about that? It's happening.
I mean, poor Will is trying to, like, cut into another world. And he's so distracted and so much pain. He can't even do that. They were about to get their ass whooped.
It was going to be wild. And it was so cool to, like, see how they adjusted this from the books. But it was still treacherous and just scary. Like, it was really scary how it was going down. And then, lucky for them, right in the nick of time, as usual, Serafina shows up right then. And in the woods nearby, Serafina looks at Will. And basically, when Serafina shows up, the kids, like, she tells the kids to get the hell out of here. Like bounce. And she, you know, there's shit. But, they just saw a witch show up.
Right. But, like, Angelica's still ready to murk somebody. So I mean, she's like, yeah, I'll be back.
That look on her face, right?
Is that?
I mean, you killed her brother. She's ready. So in the woods nearby, Serafina looks at Will's wound and deduces that it will need more than herbs. The witches will have to cast the spell. Serafina insisted they must go back to Lyra's world where they can protect them and gather more potent herbs for Will's wound. Lyra and Will discuss this, and he asks her to consult the alethiometer. It tells her Will's father is close, like super close, like, this dude is, like, real nearby. They talk about, where is he? Up.
Like, up. Like, look up.
Like, look up. There he is. Lyra later tells Serafina what the alethiometer says about helping Will to find his father, and the witch reluctantly agrees to help.
Real reluctantly, though.
Yeah, she was not, because she's only concerned about the prophecy in their world, and I don't, you know, but she later talks about the prophecy, which makes me wonder why she's holding back so much, because it clearly says that there's going to be a boy, right?
Mm-hmm,
so,
mm-hmm.
So the witches basically decide to cast a spell to heal Will, and the next day it appears to have worked. Serafina and Kaiser tell Will about the prophecy and tell him that he must protect Glyra as much as she protects him. So this is the moment where she kind of says, you know, hey, there is a prophecy and it says that there'll be a boy. And you know what? She feels like she's destined to be there for you. And I hope that you understand that you need to be there for her as well.
So. Well, I mean, honestly, it was Kaisa who was like, tell Will about the prophecy. And Kaisa who was like, and there's a boy in the prophecy. He was like, I did the reading. I'm caught up. I did the homework.
Also, on top of that, while you're chilling and doing all things you're doing, I also flew over there to talk to Yurik. Like, I've been busy, okay? I've been doing a lot of shit. Kaisa's on his game. Based on the Alethiometer's direction, the witches, Will, Lyra, and Pan continue to head up the mountain and are attacked by specters, who Will scares off with the knife, which was like really a great scene. Like when he pulls out the knife and runs them away. And just like the fact that they're still in pursuit of his dad and like not letting their setback stop them.
So the next storyline we're going to talk about is Mrs. Coulter and Boreal. They are also in Chidagatsi, where they crossed over, and they're looking for Lyra, mostly Lyra, but Will as well. Mm-hmm. They come across an adult who has been attacked by the specters, and Mrs. Coulter examines him. She's interested. She's not scared. She's just kind of like, we could use this.
I mean, it looks familiar. She's done this.
Boreal says to her, it's almost like the specters are severing demons, right? And she goes, nope, they don't sever. It's stronger than that. Mm-hmm. And we can learn from this. Always scheming. She's a schemer. Always scheming. A bit later, the specters do arrive, and Boreal and the golden monkey are shook.
No, let's like extrapolate and go further than shook. Like, Boreal closes the door like, this bitch gonna die. Like, I'm just chilling.
And the golden monkey is like, what are you doing? Where are you going? But he does not follow.
Yeah, he does not. Nobody is helping her. Like, luckily she has this, but nobody was even considering helping her. They were just like, oh, I'm gonna close these doors in case she's not gonna make it.
Yeah, I mean, she clearly calmed the golden monkey because he was advancing and then she kind of like took a pause and he also took a pause, but he was still shook. He was scared. But Mrs. Coulter was not at all afraid and she walked towards the specters. And in what I can only describe is a beautifully terrifying scene. The specters approach and then recoil from Mrs. Coulter while Boreal watches from behind a glass door.
Yeah.
Bro, the glass is not going to say, like,
my take too. Like, what was his thought process in this? Like, you know what? I'm just going to close these doors and they won't come find me. You know what I mean? Like, it's wild.
And eventually it appears that the specters are under Mrs. Coulter's control and she sends them away. Later, Boreal inquires how she did this as they have a celebration drink.
A little refreshment.
You know, she's hyped. Like, she's like, let's celebrate. And they get some drinks. They consume what makes us human. And I just hid that from them. That's what she said, which I was then shook. I was like, okay, so you just suppressed your humanity. Cool. No big deal.
Yeah. Yep. This is when you ask the how. You're like, whoa. What? Like, something is going on, man. Coulter has given us so many mysteries about what's going on underneath.
Yeah. Her and her origin and how she's able to do some of this has become one of the biggest mysteries of the show. So Boreal tries once again, unsuccessfully, to woo her. He's out here talking about all they could have together. You know, then he makes the classic mistake. Fellas, don't do this. I consider you my equal. No, I knew it was, I was like, it's a wrap for him.
It was bad.
Right.
It was bad.
Right then.
So what was his proper approach in this moment? What was he supposed to do?
This woman just controlled specters. All he's been able to do is sneak around in this city. Like, as soon as they got there, he was scared because he knows what the specters can do. But she literally just got the specters under her control. She can control them. She's telling you she found a way to control these things that have you in a city right now that has no adults in it, is mostly abandoned. And you're like, oh, after you showed that you have a superpower, you're my equal.
Yeah. It was wild. It was wild. It was like super.
If he had not already been sitting down, I would have been like, take several seats, Boreal.
Yeah, he just like, it's like the self-awareness was completely lacking. Like you said, all he's done is creep around, get his minions killed, like lose the knife, get bested by an adolescent child. I mean, like, it's just like, this guy, she shows up for 2 seconds and controls specters that you've been running from since you've been crossing over. It's wild. I don't understand his logic here.
Yeah, so they toast to that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, she basically tells him as soon as he starts struggling, I don't need you. And your ambitions would just hold me back. And she poisons him. He dies.
He dies. Oh my
and
god!
It was such an incredible scene because Tiny Nagini was like getting close to the golden monkey. Like, hey,
the golden monkey was not feeling it either. By the way, the golden monkey was backing up. He was nervous. He was like, "What's happening?"
He was like, "We don't like you.
Yeah.
Are you not getting the signs? Y'all don't see that she doesn't like you."
Yeah.
And then the Tiny Nagini turned to dust because Boreal is dead. He is no
longer
with us.
Poor Tiny Nagini. Like, you know what I mean? Like, Tiny Nagini did not ask for this life. Like you said.
No.
Like, you know.
No, she really didn't. She really didn't.
And I think that, you know, let's pour some of that shitty Chittagatsi wine out for Boreal. Okay? That shit that you get over there when it's, like, been fermenting and nobody's been around. Pour a little drop, a couple of drops.
Just
out
a
of the
drop,
pavement.
Yeah. I mean, Boreal's been with us since the beginning.
Exactly.
So we gotta give him a little something. I'm mostly pouring my drop out for Tiny Nagini. But yeah, let's pour a little something.
I mean, here's a guy who gave us like light snacking while plotting murder, you know, like he was eating waffle fries, he's had multiple vehicles. He gave great laughs. I mean, when they booted up his car and he pulled out a cell phone after being over in Lyra's world, we were like, what the fuck just happened? Like, here's a man who knew, unlike Will, that his cell phone battery was not going to work over in other spots. So he just left it inside the car and charged it and came over and got it when it was time. I mean, he had a beautiful mansion, was a collector of great things. But like most of the people over in Lyra's world, his own hubris is going to be his downfall. Like,
yeah, I was obviously not surprised that this happened, but it still felt so grimy that it happened.
I mean, she did and pulled off what would have saved us all a lot of trouble had the headmaster done this right. Like, had Lyra not tipped over the wine that the headmaster poisoned, like in the study, but it's so interesting that he dies trying to kind of emulate and surpass Azrael. He dies in a way that Azrael was able to evade. Once again, showing he is not the better man in this scenario. Even though we don't like Azrael, Azrael's still a little bit better than Boreal. I'm just saying. Tiny bit.
Right. I mean, I think the difference is that Azrael actually has, like, a plan. Yeah. I don't... What is Boreal's plan again?
Flex until he gets culty. Like, flex until he gets culty. That is it. That's all he wants, you know?
Yeah. Well, his plan has come to an end, whatever it was, because he's
and
gone.
Now his watch has ended. It's over. And back in the magisterium, Fra Pavel finally, you know, he's got some news. He's got some news. It didn't quite take the 2 months we were anticipating. Got there a little quicker. But he tells Cardinal MacPhail what the alethiometer said about Mrs. Coulter. It told him that Mrs. Coulter is looking for her child. He also tells Cardinal MacPhail that previously Mrs. Coulter asked him who Lyra Belacroix is. And it told her that Lyra's name is her destiny and the same as the mother of all. And then they do like a cutaway at them.
Dun, dun, dun.
Based on this news, Cardinal MacPhail tells the leaders of the magisterium that he has sent forces through the anomaly after Lyra, Bellacroix.
I mean, I think he just said after the girl or whatever, but still.
Yeah, he did say after the girl. But, you know, the thing about it is, again, super extra. You're sending airships through an anomaly. Why not get them to the anomaly, send them out through foot? Like, you don't think it's going to cause any sort of, like, you know, announcement? The people are not going to wonder what the hell is going on. What if there were people in Chittagatse?
Yeah, I mean, this is very aggressive, yeah. Right? They don't know what's on the other side of the hole in the sky.
No, no, no.
They have no idea. So they're flying into this hole in the sky, into a different world with... is an act of force? Not a good look.
They went through complete denial. Like, their strategy at first was, let's just act like the hole's not there. You know what I mean? Then it went from that to, no, we got to at least acknowledge it, to murderous plots by Mrs. Coulter and him so he could become cardinal, to imprisoning, like, rivals. And now he's like, you know what? Full-on invasion. Let's go. That's my plan. So... I think that it's very interesting, this scene also, that, you know, Fra Pavel to say, I fear that you've come into power at a most, you know, inconvenient time, in a terrible time. He's like saying, this is going to be a problem for you. And MacPhail's like, let me double down on this cup of overwhelm. He's out of his depth. I feel like he's out of his depth.
Yeah, he really is. I mean, last week we were joking about him asking if he was okay.
Man. He's not okay.
I think the answer is no. He's not okay. Not great. In our friend Zuko's words. That's rough, buddy.
On an airship. On an airship, nonetheless. Oh, man.
Mary Malone is also in Chittagatse. She arrives with little fanfare because there's no one around. She kind of just hangs out for a bit. Like, you know, it's not extremely dangerous, or she hasn't just crossed into a new world. She's very casual.
Beach.
Yeah, I mean, it's extremely casual. I would have been so stressed out. And she's just, like, kind of looking around. She uses the I Ching to communicate with the angels. And it tells her that signs are coming that will steer her on her path. While looking around, she runs into Angelica and Paula. And they tell her everything. Like, they just unload information on her. They tell her about the specters. They figure out she's not from this world. They tell her that Lyra and Will fled with a witch and that they were trying to kill Lyra.
Was that wrong?
Very openly.
Was that wrong?
Is that wrong?
Yes. Yes, it was fucking wrong.
Yes, it was wrong. It's murder. It appears from what they said that the other children have also left. So it's really just the two of them left in the city. Mary feels very sorry for them, and we'll talk more about this exchange because this was my favorite part of this episode. She feels sorry for them, and she offers to take them with her so that they can find their parents or the adults. She doesn't specify their parents, but meanwhile, Lee and Grumman are also heading to Chittagatse. Everyone's hanging out there. It's like, it's a place to be. They have a little, you know, bro time, bond over some coffee. Grumman tells Lee that he spent time with the witches, spirits, other magical beings, academics, yada yada. And he also talks about missing his son and his wife and having tried to get back to them. When they arrive into Chittagatse, they see that the city is overrun with specters. And my guess is that they're arriving around the same time that Mrs. Coulter had that swarm of specters around her. And they keep going, since Grumman tells Lee that it's unlikely that if the specters are that close to the tower, that the bearer is there. But it turns out they're being pursued by those same Magisterium airships. Grumman tries to give them an advantage by conjuring up winds. And when the airships attack, he sends a flock of birds towards them. But during the process, one of the airships fires at the balloon, and the balloon heads for a crash landing. And that's how the episode ends, which has me deeply stressed because, you know, Lee is in danger. I don't really care about Grumman.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess I care about him because that's Will's dad. But yeah, it was an upsetting ending.
You know my stance on trash dads and caring about them in hindsight. Anyway, we talked about I'm with you. I'm a little concerned about what's gonna happen there. You know, our crew is having a rough time. Like, you know, they're going down, Will is, although like kind of the bleeding's at bay a little bit, he's still wounded pretty badly. You know, Mrs. Coulter is doing her culty things, you know?
Yeah, I mean, Mrs. Coulter basically became a supervillain.
Yeah.
And Will and Lyra got some powerful but not invincible allies. And that's kind of where we're at right now.
Yeah. 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 I mean, man, I'm having the moment. I'm having the moment you had a few weeks ago. I mean, it's rough to feel empathy for a person who's just out here murdering people over like drinks. She's like
casually. And she, I mean, we should talk about this moment too after she did it, where she felt that she needed to punish herself for doing it. You know, she held her hand over the flame. She told the golden monkey that, you know, she had to be strong. Mm-hmm. It was just like, this is a woman who is essentially unhinged, but she's not unhinged in the way that would make her ineffective. She's effective at executing these vicious plans, but she's not mentally okay or emotionally okay
at all. I mean, she hung out there with the dead body, just like chilling still till nighttime. When nighttime fell, she was still out there, like still drinking, still hanging, like just like he's dead and you're just chilling. It's wild. She's gone off the deep end for sure. I think I've come to the end of the road of feeling the, I mean, maybe they'll surprise me, but I can't imagine feeling more sympathy for this person and kind of feeling like, man, I feel bad for Mrs. Coulter. I mean, I do feel bad for the journey that she's come to, that's brought her to this point, but she's kind of hit a point where, you know, she is, like you said, the supervillain of the story at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I think we can empathize with her the same way we do with Azula from Avatar. She wasn't born that way, yeah. Right? She was made that way. And I think you made that comparison a couple episodes ago. I feel empathy for Mrs. Coulter, but she is vicious. She is incredibly vicious.
Yeah. I mean, and Azula only shot people with lightning. She didn't kill anybody. I mean, like, you know what I mean?
But
like,
she did try.
She did many attempt times. Many times.
many times.
Man. Shouts to Ty Lee and May, you know what I mean? Putting her back in her place for a little bit. So let's talk about some of the moments that we had. Why did Lee use his cloud pine? Why didn't he use the cloud pine to summon Serafina, in your opinion? Like, what do you think?
This really bothers me. It bothered me in the book as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess that Lee doesn't know that the witches crossed over. Indeed. So there's that. But you're in trouble. Serafina told you that if you needed her to use the cloud pine. What is happening here?
I don't know. I find it like really tough. Like this whole like, you know, side mission feels like I don't understand what Lee's doing. And that's what kind of thing is getting him out there. Like, I don't understand why he's taking this side mission with Grumman. I know that so are we to assume that Grumman basically has a spell on him and that he summoned him in a way that he's like now devoid of his own will? Because in my mind, he should be still, once he realizes Grumman can't really do much, he should be in deep search for Lyra. Like, that's his number one mission, right? So It doesn't seem to make sense why he's getting distracted this way. And maybe in that distraction, he decides not to use the cloud pod, or maybe even forgets he has it. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that this, we could have raised this objection before, which was when Mrs. Coulter sprung him from prison. That would have been the perfect time for him to summon Serafina then. But it just, while they were kind of like cratering towards the earth, I'm sitting here being like, well, you know someone who literally can fly. Mm-hmm. And you can see, you know the damage that she can do. Now, Lee doesn't have all the information we had, because we know that the witches have been depleted in numbers. We know that she crossed over. Mm-hmm. So we have a lot more information than he does. But I still just, it bothered me even in the book. I was kind of like, I don't understand why this is happening and he's not summoning Serafina right now.
Yeah, that's fair. I think that's fair. And it, you know, it also, you know, I think that some of the other things that we can talk about are, Will and Lyra and the sleep on the mountain. I really, really want to talk about this. So when they're sleeping on the mountain, Pan cuddles up with Will?
Yeah. It's all these... Okay, so last season, everyone had something to say about the demons mm-hmm. and how they weren't changing enough. They didn't interact with the humans enough. The demons just didn't feel the way that they felt in the books, like they're part of the person. Mm-hmm. They felt like a separate character almost entirely. And I didn't agree with that totally, because I feel like the antagonists and the villains had demons that felt very much a part of their personality. Sure. But I will agree that, like, sometimes Hester seems like a totally different character from Lee. Pan certainly is a character in his own right. But I love that in the tiny moments, the bond between Lyra and Will, if you're watching closely, you can see that Pan and Will mm-hmm. are developing a closeness that is very unusual. As long as Boreal and Mrs. Coulter knew each other, that snake and that monkey don't know each other like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, that sentence sounds terrible, but... but you know what I mean. Yeah. Like... Pan cuddling up in between them, but like a little snuggling a little closer to Will. I loved it. I was so moved. I thought it was so, it really shows how close Lyra is becoming to Will, even though Lyra is not always the best about communicating her feelings.
It's true. And you know where we've seen this before, this comfort of demons with each other and the other person.
With Roger.
Yes, but even deeper, I think, yes, for sure. But I also think with Mrs. Coulter and Asriel, that their demons were very comfortable with each other when they first saw each other, when they saw each other over there by at the scene where he's like opened up the portal. Like, their demons were like pretty into seeing each other again. You know what I mean? Like, so mm-hmm. I think like, that's another thing that you can like look at, like the closeness of the people really can determine a lot of this too, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So interesting. Will doesn't have a demon to do that. I mean, he has the cat. The cat is, you know, we all have cat demons. You know?
My demon is a cat for sure.
Yeah, for sure. We all have cat demons. So, I mean, I thought there were some touching scenes here too. I thought that, you know, Lyra and Will's devotion to each other is like really on display, like in mm-hmm. the challenges it's facing. I think that like what you're gonna, like, you know, Serafina is not really about this mission, you know, this is a side quest in her mind, you know, like, she's like, what is this, you know? And she really wants to get back to the main journey. But in actuality, Lyra is, you know, showing real loyalty. Like, she gave a promise to Will when she said, you now that you've helped me get my alethiometer back, everything I do is going to be to help you find your father. And she's keeping that promise. You know what I mean? Like, and, you know, I thought it was a really powerful thing to see them sharing more of their stories with each other.
Yeah. I mean, I think the whole scene where Will talks about his mother's mental illness and the bullies that tormented mm-hmm. her, I mean, it really sets up the Will that we know from season one, which was kind of a loner, mm-hmm. a very responsible kid, but not a kid that had a lot of friends. And so this bond he has with Lyra is very different and new for him, because he's never really been able to trust anyone, because he's always been on his guard. Lyra hasn't seen that part of him. Like, the feelings we have for Will, the protectiveness that we have, she didn't see any of the stuff we saw. So she's getting to know him. She's getting to understand why he is the way he is. And I love that. I think these little moments between Lyra and Will are really selling their bond in a way that I wasn't sure that it would happen. Because it feels very much sometimes like the bonds that are created are just because they went through something together. Mm-hmm. And I don't just mean for Lyra and Will, but I mean in the show in general, like, Lee is now kind of obsessively trying to help Lyra off of this experience that they had together, but he doesn't know Lyra that well. Yeah. And so I think that sometimes, not just fantasy, but all television shows fall into this like people are going to go through something traumatic together and they'll automatically be bonded for life. And that does happen, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. But I think that the small moments, those moments of connection between them are really filling in the gaps where you, in making it more believable, where you may not think like these two would be essentially ride or dies. Mm-hmm. I mean, these two are not messing around. Like they will do anything for each other at this point. I really appreciate the smaller moments.
I agree. I mean, I mean, just as simple as I could never trust anyone. And then until you met me, right? Like that's like, mm-hmm. okay. Mm-hmm. Like, wow. Okay. So we're hitting that note. And then, you know, kind of really their take, how they're unpacking this thing about the kids in Shitagatsi and saying like, hey, you know, I've never seen kids act like that. Lyra's saying, and Will's like, I have. And then that's when they get into the conversation about, you know, his mom. But what's interesting to me is that juxtaposition of their take on the kids in Shitagatsi and Mary Malone's take on the kids in Shitagatsi, because mm-hmm. that conversation that she has with Angelica and Paola is just like, it's revealing and gives you like, we went from like, oh my God, Angelica and Paola and all these kids in Shitagatsi, they're trying to, you know, kill our favorites and we, you know, don't like them, to like, oh wait, this show has done a masterful job of that. They do to say, oh, wait, there's another deeper story here that gives them motivation and a reason to be who they are, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, let's just talk about the scene with Mary Malone and Angelica and Paula. It's, I mean, it says so much about Mary. And watching that scene, my initial thought was this scene is actually about Mary more than it's about the children, mm-hmm. because she's immediately approaches them with kindness and empathy.
Yep.
And she looks, Mary Malone is not a parent, but she immediately takes on the role of looking after them. Here's some food. Are you alone? Mm-hmm. What happened here? It's a really moving scene when Paola asks for a hug. Mm. At that point, I was just a puddle on the couch. It was really, really moving. And then when Angelica asks her to stay, mm-hmm. and she's like, you can boss us around. It's fine. Make us take baths. Tell us when to do things. Mm-hmm. Like, we need someone. And you are safe here because the specters can't touch you. Mm-hmm. So please stay with us. Oh, my gosh. This scene was so moving to me.
Agreed.
Like, These kids have gone through something really terrible, and I think that the show has always done a good job of focusing on the pain and suffering of the children who experience these horrible things, right? So we had the children at Bolvanger mm-hmm. and the Egyptian children, and I think the show did a pretty good job last season of showing us what the ramifications of the kids in Bolvanger being cut from their demons. Mm-hmm. And also just the pain that their families, the Egyptian children's families, felt in being separated from them. And then now they're offering much empathy to these kids who are victims essentially of Azrael's opening this portal in a way that Pullman does not offer these kids
Let me tell you, in the books, I was not sympathetic to Angelica, Paola, Eddie. I was like, oh my God, these kids are terrible. But here, you really, there's another layer to this story that you're like, oh wow. And then you see, I mean, Mary, like you say, you see Mary and her heart on display, willing to take these kids with her. Why don't you come with me? You know, like offering them. And you know, they don't show us whether that's, you know, whether that's going to happen or not. But, you know, the fact that she's willing to take these kids, like, hey, come with me. Come with me on my journey. I can't stay here with you, but you can come with me. And I can, like, you know, kind of take care of you now that you've been, like, left here and abandoned. It just shows you who she is. And, you know, like, she didn't know this kid, but yeah, I'll hug you. Like, come get this hug. And already, like, when they're asking her, these kids need direction. They're like, well, we wanted to kill them. Is that wrong? Like, or what? You know, like, you know, are they the murderer and the good kind? I don't know. Let's ask the alethiometer, like the good kind of murderer, like Yurik. Like, you know, let's ask.
Yeah, I loved it. And I find it so nice that the show is focusing on this. I really do. Yeah. I mean, I don't know if we'll see these two again in the future. I would hope so, since they kind of told us that they were going to go with her, or at least they had that option. But I think it's a good use of the actors mm-hmm. as well. You know, she was Lady Mormont. Yeah. So.
We're not trying to lose Lady Mormont at all. No, I love it. Yeah, it's great. It's a great thing. And I think alliances have always been key in this story. And we've talked about that, right? We've talked about it in the first episode. And I think it's worth noting that Lyra's alliances have become stronger, right? That mm-hmm. all of Mrs. Coulter's have started to kind of deteriorate a little bit, except for now she's got the specters on her side. But Lyra's alliances seem to be getting stronger, built on trust. And Mrs. Coulter seems to be built on deceit and manipulation. And mm-hmm. so this is like showing you that there's a track here of like her growth, like Lyra's growth is she's moved away from the Lyra that we knew even in the when we first met her in Jordan College to who she is now, that goes from where it's all about her to like, I'm selflessly going to help Will find his dad. She doesn't know what her mission is in that. She's just trying to be helpful, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I think that we only have seen a little bit of the Lyra from last season, which is why Serafina was getting like a little irritated, but also is like being obstinate mm-hmm. is like mm-hmm. your best ability. But she has really grown and turned into a person that I'm not sure that I believe that she could have been last season, when she was very single-minded. It was really about what her mission was. She was very focused on what she needed to do. I mean, she obviously that mission was not entirely selfish, right? Mm-hmm. She really wanted to find her friend Roger. So I don't mean to make her seem like a brat, but this Lyra who's willing to take direction from Will, mm-hmm. a thing that Lyra never does well if, like, she wouldn't take direction from Father Corum,
like Roger. Like, that's like a classic line that Roger had, like when she sets off the alarm and everything's going, he's like, oh my gosh, like you know what I mean, like he's like, she's grown a bunch. I think she's grown a bunch.
Yeah,
you know,
it's nice to see the part of her that's collaborating.
I agree. And I also think that yeah, as far as like the distractibility that she used to have, like, you know, let's think about it. When Roger was missing, yeah, she started out like, we're going to go find Roger. But she also like got totally immersed and distracted in Mrs. Coulter's world before she got the warning about the gobblers, and she was out, right? But that's not happening now. Now here comes Serafina Pecula, and she could easily have gotten just as distracted and engulfed in what Serafina came and said, and let's go back to my world. And she almost did. And then, you know, Will Wyatt says, hey, check the alethiometer. And now she's like, okay, you know what? Let's stay on our mission. So she's like very clearly grown in that way of like staying focused, staying on the mission. And I think it's going to pay off. I hope it pays off, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. What? Do we want to unpack this loaded conversation between Boreal and Colty, or have we talked enough about them?
We've talked a little bit, but I think, like, you know, the thing that I think is important to kind of talk about is just where we met them and where they end up. Like, you know, I think that when we first meet the two of them in Lyra's world, they are, like, yes, they have their own agendas, they have their own stuff going on, but they are collaborators on some level, right? They're helping each other. He even helped her when she was trying to locate Lyra with those, you know, those bugs that they sent out. I think the thing that was most fascinating to me was that, as he's saying, we're equals, Mrs. Coulter not only is, you know, far superior in intellect and her understanding of you know, dark matter and all those things. The only thing that Boreal really had was crossing over into the different worlds. And she's very, very resentful about it. She says in this statement, she's saying, you know, all these things that you kept from me, you know, you could have easily just told me where Lyra was the moment that you saw her, but you know, you didn't do that. And she, you can tell that there's a part of her that feels like, you know what, this conniving and scheming that you're doing on a petty level is as she says, is only going to hold me back. You think too small for what this actually is. And the proof of that is that you couldn't actually be a real partner to me and helping me in what I was after. And so you have to, so that was her feeling of why he needed to pay, I think. So I thought that was interesting. Those were some interesting takes around, but after the conversation that we saw about what she could have been in this world, realizing that part of that Boreal kind of represents the like kind of like weight and the heaviness that held her down in that other world, and she's ready to be free from it.
Mm-hmm. I think that Boreal's first mistake was that he didn't really know mm-hmm. her. And yes, she's not an easy person to get to know. I mean, her own daughter still doesn't really know her. Sure. And she lived with her for a short period. So it's not, that's not on him. Mrs. Coulter can suppress her humanity. So you can only imagine what else she can suppress. But I think that he assumed that he knew her and he doesn't. And he also kind of assumed that, you know, she's going to spend her life pining for Asriel. And she's made it pretty clear she's not. Her ambitions go beyond her relationship with Asriel. 100%. So I there was so much to unpack in this. I mean, I'm sure that we could talk more about it. But it, I mean, she's such a great character. In my opinion, the way that Mrs. Coulter's written on the show is the most engaging thing about this show.
I agree. And what do you think? How do you think it plays out for where she's going when we start thinking about the next episode? That's the finale. Like, what do you think? What do you think is next for her?
So, you know, like we know where this is probably going to go. I mean, they've made some changes from the book for sure, but they're sticking to the book in many, many important ways. But I do have some questions about, so Mrs. Coulter doesn't have as much information as a lot of the other mm-hmm. characters. She's certainly more in the dark at this point than Cardinal McPhail mm-hmm. because he got the answer to the question that she wanted the answer mm-hmm. to, which is, who is Lyra? What is the other name that the witches call mm-hmm. Lyra? So she doesn't have this information. I don't, you know, Lyra doesn't have it either, and neither does Will, but Serafina does have it. And some of the other characters have the information. So I guess I'm curious to see how she advances, given that she doesn't have the full story.
Yeah.
That she doesn't really know everything that she doesn't know everything we know, first of all. And then she also, there are other characters on the board who know a lot more than she does.
Well, she might not even know as much as someone who's been missing from this whole season, as much as Asriel knows. Like, will we see? Like, what has Asriel been up to? What is he doing? Like, where is, you know, like, so Ruta's on her way to find out or go get him. But what, she may not have like all the story, but Asriel has a little piece that's actually a big piece of this whole story, really. Do you think that there's like, do you think we'll see him again?
Yeah, I mean, part of the issues that this show encountered this year was they weren't able to film everything. And so I haven't really understood where they made changes. I do believe that Asriel is going to make a small appearance. But like, what does that mean? Is it going to be present day? Is it going to be in flashback? Is it going to be mm-hmm. like, are we going to get a whole Asriel scene? Is he going to be with Lyra? Like, I have a lot of questions. And when I was reading the book, I had a lot of questions about what Asriel was doing in general. It's mm-hmm. not clear. A lot of people have been frustrated, like, okay, why is everybody after Asriel? Because they don't understand like what it is that Asriel's doing. Don't worry, mm-hmm. you will find out. But it does, he is such a big character in this story, and he's not in the story. He was only in two episodes last season. Like, Azrael and Ozai really got a lot of people stressed out for not a lot of screen time.
It tracks, right? Failure as a man, failure as a father. You know what I mean? Like, just like looming presence, but absenteeism. Like, it all tracks. It tracks. Like, yeah, I am. Ozai and Azrael, what a good tie-in. I agree that they don't have a lot of time on screen, but they are so present in, like, everything that the stories are about. Like, you know, like, it's really, really interesting you brought that up. That's...
Yeah, I mean, Azrael has done something here that's very profound, and we don't understand fully why he's doing it or what his end game is. I don't know if Marissa Coulter understands what his end game is. She seems to have a sense about what he might be trying to do. Lyra obviously has no idea what he's doing. The witches don't seem clear because Ruta has mentioned multiple times that she would like to understand, is he going to war with the Magisterium? Is he, like, what is he doing? So I think that we need to understand what Azrael's actually up to in order to, you know, move on with the story. I don't see how you can close out the season without clarifying what is, the big reveal of this season should be. What has Azrael been doing?
You know, Ruta is going to find out, air quotes, what Azrael's been up to. But, you know, they got history. I wonder if that's really her motivation. You know, Mrs. Coulter said, I did hear that he was involved with a witch.
They definitely
got some history. She ain't just going in to talk about what he'd been up to in this other world because of that. So, you know, she's going to go get Azrael, bring him back. Why would she go and nobody else go? How could she bring him back and motivate him? What motivations would he have? Oh, man. And I guess the question is, you know, we saw Grumman go down right there with Lee and Hester. Do you think Will and Grumman gonna link back up?
I mean, I think the show will open, probably the first scene will be something like them crash landing. And then I guess my question is, how and if they link up with Lyra and Will, are they able to? There's one Magisterium ship that is still functional. Is that ship going to land? Are they going to continue to be under fire? Will Lee summon Serafina? Like, I have a bunch of questions about where his story goes, but I have to be honest with you, like, the Grumman Lee stuff doesn't sit well with me. It doesn't work for me. I don't know what it is about it, but it just doesn't. I find them together not engaging, and I don't think that's about necessarily the acting. I think there's just something a little off about their alliance, and like, why are they doing this? And I don't know. It's a little bit confusing, and it's especially since we know that Grumman, okay, so he's going by this name Joe Perry, which is clearly John Perry. And we know that his son is already the bearer of the knife. And we know that Lyra is with his son. And they don't know that. And I just find that it's a little bit irritating to me that there's on this side mission that seems kind of like, why is this happening? Like, we already have the bearer of the knife, and that person, Lyra's already under that person's protection. So I know that this book is, a lot of it is based on Will trying to find his father. I hope for a reunion between the two of them, but this storyline irks me a little bit. I can't really put my finger on it.
I think it already was tough It already was difficult in the books, right? Like, to understand where it tracked until you get closer to the end. But I think on the show, what bothers me about it more than anything is that just it was fast tracked, and that a lot of the parts that make the journey, the payoff of Lee's journey, happen don't really happen in the show. Like, you know, they,
yeah, that's a fair point. I completely forgot about that. He found Grumman too easily.
He finds Grumman way too easily, and there was so much more that Lee had to work, really work, to find this person, and that's part of the whole story and why it's important, is because he thinks for majority of the book, he thinks he's in search of, he's trying to find Grumman so that he can get help with finding Lyra. And he, so like, that's his whole mission. It's to help Lyra. And so when he finds him that quickly in the show, it's like, it's just too quick. There's so much that you don't get to see because his journey isn't as fleshed out, you know, in the show. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And even their first meeting was a little short shift. Like, it just got the chapter in the book where Grumman and Lee meet is significantly longer than the scene that we got. And it's more interesting. We learn a lot about Grumman in that scene. And it just doesn't sit right with me. I don't know. I'm not a big fan of this particular alliance. I like these characters both individually. Like, I think that Stanislaus Grumman is a very interesting character, and obviously the one that set this whole thing off. And I like Lee Scoresby a lot. Like, I love Hester.
Love Hester.
I want this to work, but the storyline doesn't work for me.
I'm with you, and I just wish that, you know, like you said, there's like a lot there. Like, one thing I wish that we would have got more of, which I know you have time constraints, and I get it. The time constraints really do impact it. But I really do like the culture of, like, why Grumman can do some of the things he can do by being a shaman and living amongst the people he was living amongst that are in the books that made him that. Right now, we don't see any of those people. And that people, like, kind of shielding him and protecting him from the outside world for all those years so that he could do the spiritual growth work that he needed to do to be able to do some of the things that we're witnessing him do, like control the wind and, you know, understand, you know, how does he have this knowledge about the bearer? Because he studied all of that, right? And so it's, and you know, this telepathy that he, this like kind of like, telepathy may not be the right term, but there's like, in the writing that Pullman has, there's a way that he's able to go have an inner world and like another dialogue, like through meditation, that kind of like allows him to be able to understand how things are going to play out. It's just, that's all missing. Like, there's no context to why he has these powers. So I think that's a big reason why I think this feels like a, you know, a sidetrack. It feels like how I used to feel before I realized the relevance of it. It feels like season one, every time Game of Thrones cut to the wall. And I was just like, oh God, I don't want to be back at the wall right now. You know what I mean? But eventually it paid off. I don't know if it's going to pay off in this series, you know?
Yeah, it does feel a little bit like a side journey that's not entirely clear how it fits in. But you know, it is at this point in the season, this is almost a nitpick because they've done so many other things well. And I would rather them kind of short shift this, like, summarize this relationship than losing any of the stuff we've seen with Mrs. Coulter, which is not in the book.
Yeah, agreed. Mrs. Coulter, Will and Lyra, these things have been magical.
So if that was a sacrifice that had to be made, like they basically summarize Lee's journey to Grumman. Maybe they felt creatively that it was too long in the book or whatever, or they just didn't have the time. Instead, what we got was more time learning about Marissa Coulter and her motivations and who she is. I'm okay with that. That's a creative decision I can understand and respect.
For sure. Well, let's talk about the theme. So this week's theme is responsibility.
A lot of that going around this episode.
Yeah, definitely. Serafina has been very clear with Ruta and the other witches. Their task is to protect and help Lyra. And when she meets Will, she tells him Lyra feels responsible for him, but he is also responsible for her. Talk about that real parent talk. Like, listen, let me give you the talk real quick. Make sure we got this straight. Responsibility plays an outside role in Lyra and Will's journey. They both have a role to play in the destiny of the universe, but they aren't fully aware of it yet. Through their bond, their primary responsibilities have become each other. But responsibility and the consequences of ignoring also have large ramifications in this story. We have joked several times, like, about how terrible Lyra's parents are. They're really bad. And, you know, one of their biggest flaws is they have abandoned her, like, physically and emotionally, and neglected her in many ways. They've completely ignored her, their responsibility to their child. In a way, Lyra's parents represent many of the powerful forces in the story. The Magisterium is so obsessed with heresy that it oppresses and brutalizes its own people. The Guild in Chittagatse created a power tool and used it to amass wealth. The consequences of that malpractice led to the fall of a once great city and left Angelica, Paula, and the other children as orphans who have to fend for themselves. In many fantasy stories, those who have been in charge have abused their power like the Magisterium or neglected their responsibilities like the Guild, but the heroes also have the opportunity to make a different choice, to hold those in power accountable or supplant them. As the prophecy in this story has foretold, Lyra and Will must honor their responsibilities and burdens as they continue on this path of the pending war.
So we'll see. I feel like they're up to the job.
I think so too. And yeah. I think it really, you know, it comes down to, I think they're going to make some better choices, hopefully moving forward, because, you know, as we said in previous episodes, some of this responsibility is also the collateral damage, right? Like their collateral damage of other people's bad choices. And hopefully they can make choices that limit that amount of, like, damage to other people.
Yeah. I mean, look what Azrael's done. He's essentially put the world in chaos, and the pain and suffering that the children of Chittagatse have felt is largely due to him. I mean, it's not just him, right? But he definitely made it worse. So I hope that going forward, especially with their experience with the children and Tulio, that they will be mindful of the consequences of their actions, even when they have good intent.
Me too. I do too. So that's going to do it for this week. And we got a little news. So we're going to, first of all, Merry Christmas.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Goodbye, 2020.
Goodbye, 2020. Oh my gosh. So we're going to take a break. Like, we're going to, like, next week, we're not going to drop the episode. We're going to take, like, you know, a break for the holidays and come back on the following week. So next week, Thursday, there won't be an episode. The following Thursday, we will drop the finale episode, the last episode for this season, covering His Dark Materials, and it will have all of our takes and information on that. And then, you know, quite possibly we'll announce what the next show is. We'll do that in the, you want to do that in the next episode, or you want to wait till a separate announcement?
Let's see how we feel. I think we might be ready.
I think we're ready. Yeah, I think we're ready too. So we'll see. We'll see. So we hope that you have a wonderful, wonderful Christmas, and hope that you have a great New Year's celebration. I know, stay safe. And we're just so grateful for all of you guys and participating and being here with us and listening and sending us messages. And we're going to keep this thing going into the new year. So thank you for listening. Enjoy your time at home. Let's Zoom. Okay, let's Zoom and social distance. But yeah, have a good one, and thank you again for everything.
Yeah, bye everyone. Thank you so much.